Audiobook Demo. The Shawshank Redemption by Stephen King. Number 1. I came to Shawshank when I was just 20, and I'm one of the few people in her happy little family who's willing to own up to what he did. I committed murder. I put a large insurance policy on my wife, who was 3 years older than I was, and then I fixed the brakes on the Chevrolet coupe her father had given us as a wedding present. Except I hadn't planned on her stopping to pick up the neighbor woman and the neighbor woman's infant son on the way down Castle Hill. Number 2. I've told you as well as I can how it is to be an institutionalized man. At first you can't stand these four walls. Then you get so you abide them. Then you get so you can accept them. And then, as your body and your mind and your spirit adjust to an HO scale, you get to love them. You are told when to eat, when you can write letters, when you can smoke. If you're at work in the laundry or the plate shop, you're assigned 5 minutes of each hour when you can go to the bathroom. Holds. Author unknown. Stanley was not a bad kid. He was innocent of the crime for which he was convicted. He had just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. It was all because of his no-good, dirty, rotten, pig-stealing great-great-grandfather, he smiled. It was a funny joke. Whenever anything went wrong, they always blamed Stanley's no-good, dirty, rotten, pig-stealing great-great-grandfather. Supposedly, he had a great-great-grandfather who had stolen a pig from a one-legged gypsy, and she put a curse on him and all his descendants. Stanley and his parents didn't believe in curses, of course, but whenever anything went wrong, it felt good to be able to blame someone. Things went wrong a lot. They always seemed to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Animals at Play, author unknown. The end seemed very near for Hudson, a Canadian Eskimo dog tethered near the shore of Hudson Bay, east of Churchill, Manitoba. A 1,000-pound polar bear was lumbering toward the dog and about 40 others, the prized possessions of Brian Ledoon, a hunter and trapper. It was mid-November. Ice had not yet formed on the bay, and the open water prevented bears from hunting their favorite prey, seals. So this bear had been virtually fasting for 4 months. Surely a dog was destined to become a meal. The bear closed in. Did Hudson howl in terror and try to flee? On the contrary, he wagged his tail, grinned, and actually bowed to the bear as if an invitation. The bear responded with an enthusiastic language of non-aggressive facial signals. These two normally antagonistic species were speaking the same language. Let's play! The romp was on. For several minutes, dog and bear wrestled and cavorted. Once, the bear completely wrapped himself around the dog like a friendly white cloud. Bear and dog then embraced as if in sheer abandon. Overheated from his smaller playmate shenanigans, the bear laid down and called for a timeout. Every evening for more than a week, the bear returned to play with one of the dogs. Finally, the ice formed and he set off for his winter habitat. Tuck Everlasting, unknown author. Winnie Foster is about to meet the Tuck family, and the Tuck family is not like any other family in the world. Soon, Winnie will be faced with the most important decision of her life. For once you've met the Tucks, things are never the same. The man in a yellow suit came into the sunlit parlor, stood for a moment, looking around at them all. May and Miles and Jesse and Tuck, and Winnie too. His face was without expression. But there was something unpleasant behind it that Winnie sensed at once, something that made her instantly suspicious. And yet his voice was mild when he said, "You're safe now, Winifred. I've come to take you home."